Jayarad Hamadhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Channa Palabha Giravadid Hari. Gopi Channa Palabha Giravadid Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjanaya. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjanaya. Yamuna Tira Vandachariya. Yamuna Tira Vandachariya. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parvraja Gachara Satya Satya Shri Shimdi Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shri La Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Mastai Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasa Devam Gauravani Bichurni Nirvishesha Shinivari Paschachari Sudharani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 12, The Killing of the Demon Agasura. We're going to read text 19 through 24. Wait, let's see. So I'll read through the first verses and we'll do 24 together since that has the purport. So starting, I'll just read the English through from text 19. The boys said, "Dear friends, is this creature dead? Or is he actually a living python with his mouth spread wide just to swallow us all? Kindly clear up this doubt." Purport. The friends began to discuss among themselves the reality of the wonderful creature laying before them. Was it dead? Or was it actually a living python trying to swallow them up? 20. Therefore they decided, "Dear friends, this is certainly an animal sitting here to swallow us all. Its upper lip resembles a cloud reddened by the sunshine, and its lower lip resembles the reddish shadows of a cloud. On the left and right, the two depressions resembling mountain caves are the corners of its mouth, and the high mountain peaks are its teeth. In length and breadth, the animal's tongue resembles a broad traffic way, and the inside of its mouth is very, very dark, like a cave in the mountain. The hot, fiery wind is the breath coming out of its mouth, which is giving off a bad smell of burning flesh, because of all the dead bodies he has eaten." Okay, we'll do text 24 now. We have it up. Okay. Asman kimatra krsita nivishtan. Asman krsita nivishtan. Ayam tata ched bhakavad vikankshati. I'm sorry. Ayam tata ched bhakavad vinankshati. Shanara ne neti bakar yushan mukam. Vikshoda Santa Karatada Nairyayu. Asman Kimatra Grasitana Vishtan. Ayam Tata Ched Bhagavad Vinangshati. Shanadane Neti Bakar Yishan Mukham. Vikshyodha Santa Karatada Nairyayu. Asman Kibatra Grasitana Vishtan. Ayam Tata Ched Bhagavad Vinangshati. Shanadane Neti Bakar Yishan Mukham. Vikshyodha Santa Karavtada Nairyayu. Ladies. Asman, all of us, Kim, whether, Atra, here, Grisita, will swallow, the Vishtan, who have attempted to enter, Ayam, this animal, Tata, so, Chait, if, Bhakavat, like Bhakasura, Vinangshati, he will be vanquished. Shanat, immediately. Anena, by this Krishna. Iti, in this way. Baka Ari Ushat Mukham, the beautiful face of Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. Viksha, observing, looking at. Utasanta, loudly laughing. Karatadanai, with clapping of hands. Yayu entered the mouth. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Then the boys said, has this living creature come to swallow us? If he does, he will immediately be killed like Bakasura without delay. Thus they looked at the beautiful face of Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura, and laughing loudly and clapping their hands, they entered into the mouth of the python. Purport. After talking about the terrible animal this way and that way, they decided to enter the demon's mouth. They had full faith in Krishna because they had experienced how Krishna had saved them from the mouth of Bakasura. Now, here was another asura, Agasura. Therefore, they wanted to enjoy the sport of entering the demon's mouth and being saved by Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. Om Jnanatim Randasya Ganajana Salakaya Chakshu Limitamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopatri Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Vibhacha Patidano Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Namo Namaha. So here again, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we see a pattern. That pattern is that we have several verses describing the wonderful pastimes of Krishna, and then we conclude with a little nugget of spiritual knowledge, of spiritual truth. So we first of all, we enjoy these pastimes, as we mentioned before, with Bhagasura and so many of these, we, you know, and we know how Srila Prabhupada actually very much enjoyed hearing these pastimes from Krishna book being read. But then Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the essential truth, the understanding that we would take, you know, from this particular story or particular pastime. So in this particular case, we see the coward boys debating, what is this Agasura? Is it a statue? Is it alive? Is it dead? Is it some big snake? Is it a serpent? What is the reason for it? And then they finally conclude, yes, this probably is a live, dangerous serpent. And then they promptly walk right into its mouth. Which always seemed a little, you know, funny to me that, you know, after concluding, you know, debating back and forth, they said, okay, yeah, it really is a serpent. Probably really will try to swallow us and kill us. So let's go in. You know, why do they do that? Because they have complete faith in Krishna. Complete faith that Krishna will save them. And they realize this is another pastime for them to enjoy. So it says that here they wanted to enjoy the sport of entering the demon's mouth and being saved by Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. Interesting, Bakasura is referenced twice in this verse. Baka's name is mentioned. And Krishna is called the killer or the enemy of Bakasura. So in other words, they are referencing Bakasura as an example of how Krishna saved them from Bakasura. Here was a duck. What do we call it? A duck demon, right? Or crane. Sometimes it's called a crane, sometimes a duck. Anyway, this big bird demon had this huge beak, and what happened? You know, it opens its mouth to kill them, and Krishna bifurcated the demon, killed the demon. So here's another big demon with a big mouth. And so saying, hey, just like Bakasura, same thing is going to happen. We have complete confidence, complete faith that Krishna will again save us from the mouth of this demon. So obviously this is the point, and the topic we'll be talking about today is this faith that the coward boys exhibited. This is actually a wonderful example of complete faith, complete surrender to Krishna. This is the kind of faith that means I am walking into certain death, but because Krishna is with us, I know that I will be saved, that I'll be protected. And in fact, it's not only like they're grimly going to meet this fate, hoping that they'll be protected. They're laughing, they're clapping, they're singing, they're enjoying the fun of it. That's the strength of their faith. That's how much confidence they have that Krishna will always take care of them and always will save them. So we have this as an example of pure faith, of the pure faith of the pure devotees of the Lord. In fact, this pure faith is practically a prerequisite for devotional service or for pure bhakti. As I was looking at some different verses and studying for this class, I realized that several times our acharyas almost equate faith and bhakti. It's almost like, you know, they can almost be used interchangeably sometimes, this idea of having pure faith or having pure bhakti. And we'll talk about that a little bit as we go along here, how important this concept is of faith and how much it ties in with our understanding of devotion. And we can understand that almost to the degree that our faith is strong, the degree our devotion is strong or can be seen in that way. So what is faith? Well, Srila Prabhupada's famous definition from 241 Purport of Bhagavad Gita is that faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. Always like that one. Srila Prabhupada worded it so nicely. Unflinching trust, that means it's not shaken. You know, it's firm. One has a conviction that does not change. But it's in something sublime. Like I could say, I have firm conviction that this is really a floor. All right, well, that's not very impressive that I actually really believe that this is a floor. It's obvious. Everyone knows it. Everyone sees it. Something sublime means something that's a little more subtle, something that's not quite so obvious, not so easily perceived by the common person. And that, of course, is the spiritual realm, that which is outside of our material purview, that which is beyond the material senses and the material mind and intelligence. That is something that is sublime, that which is of the spiritual world. So to have that trust, that confidence in the spiritual world and in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is faith. Other definitions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 2262, it says Shraddha, of course, Shraddha is translated as faith, is confident, firm faith that by rendering transcendental loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. Such faith is favorable to the discharge of devotional service. Now, this is an interesting definition because this implies a little bit more. We're going a little more deeply into this idea. One automatically performs all subsidiary activities. This definition by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings to 22 would have been to Sanatana Goswami, right? Yeah, teachings to Sanatana Goswami is saying that this type of understanding and confidence in Krishna goes beyond any other activities. In other words, I don't need anything else. This is superior to cultivation of knowledge. This is superior to yoga. This is superior to any type of fruit of activities, any type of work that I need to do in this world. This basically trumps everything. This is where my heart and my life is situated. So that's a very strong thing. So that means that faith means there's nothing else needed other than bhakti, that bhakti alone is sufficient for everything that is required of the living entity in this world. Further, Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Sandarbha says, faith is the sole cause of the qualification to perform devotional service. By the way, most of this that I'm about Jiva Goswami, the Bhakti Sandarbha, I stole from, I always have to give my references because, you know, I'm not exactly a scholar of the Sandarbhas. I actually got some of this from a very, very wonderful book of people familiar that Shiva Ramaswamy wrote. It's his introduction to the Vrindavan series. It's about this thick, and the whole thing is like 800 pages about the nature of devotional service and the path of devotional service and how to make advancement. I highly recommend it. Very, very, very nice book. And he has all these different quotes throughout it. So that's where I got this from Jiva Goswami. Faith is the sole cause of the qualification to perform devotional service. In other words, without faith, you cannot perform devotional service. It's like the bedrock, the foundation that's there. It's the basis by which we perform our Krishna consciousness. And of course, this is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which I think is quoting the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the process, the stages of devotional service, Adau Shraddha. In the beginning, there is faith. Faith is the basis by which all other devotional service is performed. Without faith, one does not go to the next stages of associating with devotees, sadhu sangha, accepting the spiritual master, and then taking up the process of devotional service of hearing and chanting Bhajana Kriya without that faith. But at the same time, as one continues associating with devotees, continues the process of bhakti, of hearing and chanting, one's faith increases. So faith is the beginning, but faith also becomes amplified and increased as we continue the process of devotional service. And so the more we advance in Krishna consciousness, the more our faith increases, And we could also say the more our faith becomes strong, the more we are advancing in Krishna consciousness. I said it's almost a simultaneous process. So faith must be there. But one's a side note, of course, where does faith come from? Because sometimes it might be asked, if faith must be there in the beginning, what if one doesn't have faith? How would one take up the process of bhakti? And unfortunately, that's the problem for most living entities in this conditioned world, at least those in human form of life who questions of faith can even be asked of. The majority of the inhabitants, at least in this Kali Yuga, do not have faith. And therefore, it's difficult for them to take up this process. It's like Prabhupada would say, we say chant, chant, they say can't, can't. You know, in other words, the natural resistance of the living entity is there because they don't have faith. How do they develop faith? Our acharyas have told us by the accumulation of agyata sukriti, by unknown, perhaps, devotion, by associating with devotees, taking up the process of devotional service, in some way, hearing the chanting of the holy name, receiving a book, these agyata sukriti develops. And that's why, of course, we always stress, and Srila Prabhupada stressed so much the preaching of Krishna consciousness, of us being out there to give this to the conditioned souls. I mean, it's not simply like, well, we want them to read our books or we want to, you know, increase our society, our organization. No, it's not that at all. Every contact that a living entity has with bhakti, with devotional service and with devotees, increases that bank account of agyata sukriti to the point, there's sort of like the tipping point, where then one is able to have sufficient faith, and that faith is actually given by the Lord. It's not an artificial mechanical thing. You know, ching, ching, I get so many points, now I get to be a devotee. No, the free will of the living entity is there, but still, that devotional bank account grows as one performs acts of devotional service to the point that that Krishna gives that faith from within, say, yeah, let me give this a try. Let me at least listen, you know. And there's so many stories, we can actually even see this practical. I know devotees have said that, you know, they used to, like, go by a Harinam Sankirtan party, and they'd go across the street to avoid it, you know, and then pretty soon they started not going across the street, and they started kind of listening. Eventually they started, you know, then they joined in, you know, then they were, like, they were finished. You know, they had to become devotees eventually. In other words, enough contacts with devotees purifies the heart, develops this bank account of sukriti, but of course, it's not ordinary karma or punya. We should never confuse it with that, but this bank account of sukriti, whether it's knowing or unknowing, agyata sukriti, till one reaches the point of sufficient faith to begin the process of Krishna consciousness. So that faith is the beginning, and that faith is what we need to develop and increase as we progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Madhurya Kandambani, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says there are two kinds of bhakti: Shraddha and Mishra. It's real simple. It's kind of like, here you got Shraddha, Mishra, one hand or the other. What does it mean? Shraddha, of course, means faith. There again, he's equating bhakti with Shraddha, almost the same thing. So one type of bhakti is that which is based on faith, and the other is Mishra. Mishra means mixed. So we often see, and we know about, we call Karma Mishra Bhakti and Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Those are two prominent ones. In other words, devotional service or bhakti that is mixed with karma, which means mixed with fruitive activities, material desire, etc., or mixed jnana, mixed with speculative knowledge, impersonalism, etc. So these people are devotees. I should say these people. We, sometimes it's us. you know, we are sometimes often mixed devotees. Well, okay. I'm a mixed devotee, you know. Because, you know, we're not completely pure. But on the other hand, we are not. Because Srila Prabhupada did not teach us Mishra Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada taught the path of pure devotional service. Make no mistake about it. We may not be pure, but this process is the process of pure devotional service, not mixed devotional service. Our acharyas, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, all the way down through the Vaishnava Parampara to Srila Prabhupada, and hopefully to what we are all preaching on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, is the process of pure devotional service, of Shuddha Bhakti. It's just a question of how advanced we are and how much we're able to fully take that up, but the process itself is completely pure based upon the great pure devotees And of course, based upon the words of the Supreme Pure, the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how do we differentiate devotees in terms of their advancement or the degree of faith? It's interesting because we often hear about the three classes of devotees, Uttama Adhikari, Madhyam, and Kanishta. The pure devotee, the intermediate devotee, and the more neophyte Kanishta, Bhakta. One of the most basic definitions of these is based upon their degree of faith. Majjhalila 22:64 says, a faithful devotee is a truly eligible candidate for the loving service of the Lord. According to one's faith, one is classified as topmost devotee, an intermediate devotee, or an inferior devotee. And then in explanation, 22:67, one who is not very expert in argument and logic based on the revealed scriptures, but who has firm faith is considered a second-class devotee. He also must be considered most fortunate. So we're skipping by Uttama Adhikari because, I can only read about that and hope to in some lifetime perhaps get a glimpse of what a pure devotee is. But Prabhupada said we should definitely strive to the Madhyam, the intermediate platform. The Madhyama Adhikari may not necessarily be able to always convince everybody, like Srila Prabhupada, sometimes, some pandit or something, when you're talking to him, he'd sort of blow him out of the water, hitting them with about 30 verses in a row, from the scriptures to the point where they were just like, had nothing more to say. We may not be able to do that. We may not be able to expertly always recite the Sanskrit to all the verses, or to be able to, have that, complete, purity of the Uttama Adhikari. But the exemplifying characteristic of the Madhyama Adhikari is firm faith. Has firm faith in the words of the scripture, firm faith in the words of the Guru and the words of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is what we should be striving for. Of course, we should try to learn the scriptures, but at least have firm faith in the process and firm faith in the Guru to come to that platform of Madhyam. And then in verse 7, he says, one whose faith is not very strong should be considered a neophyte devotee. The Kanishta Adhikari is described as one whose faith is weak and can be convinced, can be talked out of it. In other words, someone comes up with a better argument, says, okay, that sounds good, maybe I'll try something else. And I think that's a testament to most of our devotees that we have advanced at least a little beyond that. Most of us are not so likely to become convinced by some argument you decide, maybe I'll try a different religion or a different path. No, we have developed that faith. As we've progressed in Krishna consciousness, we see the devotees develop stronger and stronger faith to at least the point that we are convinced of this process of Krishna consciousness, of the words of the Guru and the words of Krishna and our scriptures. That this really is the absolute truth. There is no higher knowledge than this. It's not a blind faith. It's faith based upon informed knowledge. It's faith based upon intelligence. And that that faith should increase our knowledge and our intelligence. Everybody has faith. It's described in chapter 17 of the Bhagavad Gita, the divisions of faith. Everyone has some faith in something. So it's not a question of do you have faith or not have faith, or does an intelligent person have faith? Everyone has faith. I may be a very intelligent person, but my faith is resting on material science or in some philosopher. Or I can be an intelligent person and my faith is based upon the Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada. So faith is there for everyone. But faith is required, actually, to understand the scripture. It will not come simply by mental speculation or by accumulation of knowledge without bhakti. The Svetashvatara Upanishad 6:23, this is a verse Prabhupada quoted many times, Jasya Devi Para Bhaktir Yata Devi Tathagaro Tashyaiti Kahita Hyarta Prakashanti Mahatmana. Only those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So through the process of bhakti and firm faith, Krishna consciousness is revealed to the devotee within the heart. That is the real process of knowledge. The real process of knowledge is that knowledge is given to us, is imparted by the supersoul within the heart to the faithful devotee. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.2, the word is pratyakshavagaman dharmyam, direct perception of the self. Now that's very interesting because it's describing how this process of bhakti gives direct perception of the self. In other words, this isn't just some sentimental faith. Direct perception means you experience this. This is something that we understand. We recognize and understand and realize our spiritual nature and our relationship with Krishna. So we don't expect people to just take to Krishna consciousness on faith. They need good argument, their intelligence needs to be convinced, and they need the experience of Krishna consciousness. And ultimately, that's what convinces people. When they take to the chanting of the holy name, when they take to the other process of Krishna consciousness, taking up prasadam, that faith develops, and that knowledge is given to them by Krishna within the heart. So faith must be there, but faith also helps us to grow that knowledge and that experience, which will help us to further progress in Krishna consciousness. How do we recognize someone with strong faith? Again, Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Sandarbha says we can discern faith by the degree of surrender that a devotee has. This word sharanagati is often used. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, wrote one of his collections of songs. It's called Sharanagati. Sharanagati means complete surrender. So this complete faith is seen by complete surrender. And Jiva Goswami says, we can discern surrender by constant endeavor to serve Krishna without a trace of fruitive intent. In other words, if my faith is strong enough in Krishna, then I don't need to strive for anything material. I don't need to make a lot of material attempts to try to satisfy the senses, to try to get the things that I need for economic development, because I know that those things are coming automatically from the Lord. It's also described that we can understand the surrender. One way is the six symptoms of surrender given by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakta Vilas. Prabhupada quotes this many places throughout his books. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Rakshishyatiti vishvaso goptritve varanam tita atma nishke pakarpanye shad vidha sharanagati. The six divisions of surrender, sharanagati, are the acceptance of things favorable to devotional service, rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection. Thinking about the coward boys walking into Agasura, conviction that Krishna will give protection. The acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, knowing Krishna's maintainer, and full surrender, complete dependence on the Lord. And last, humility. So we have a couple different indications that we see demonstrated in this full faith of the coward boys in Vrindavan, of how this demonstrates full surrender to Krishna. Conviction that Krishna will give protection, acceptance of the Lord as one's master and maintainer, and being completely dependent upon the Lord. These are signs of surrender which are exemplars of strong faith in the devotee. Of course, faith also needs to be practical. The devotee sees God working everywhere. The devotee doesn't just sit back and say, okay, Krishna, take care of me. I'll do nothing. No, we don't make God our order supplier. You know, I do nothing, you come and serve me. That's not devotion. Devotion is the opposite. Devotion is, what can I do to serve you, O Lord? So we have to, we practically do the work that's needed in this world. Everyone's heard the story. I hesitate because it's kind of one of those old chestnuts, but it's such a good story to exemplify this. I'm going to tell it anyway, even though you've all heard it. It's a Christian story about the flood. The flood came and a man had to climb on the roof of his house. As the waters rose, a neighbor in a rowboat appeared and told him, get in. No, replied the man, the roof, the Lord will save me. Then a firefighter appeared in a speedboat. Then a helicopter. No, replied the man, the roof, the Lord will save me. Eventually, the man drowns, goes to heaven. He asks God why he hadn't saved him. God, why didn't you help me in the flood? God says, I sent a neighbor, I sent the firefighter, I sent a helicopter. What more do you want? So, of course, that's the idea that we depend upon Krishna, but we also endeavor ourselves. We don't depend upon Krishna, do everything for me. Rather, we do the normal, natural things one has to do, to, as Prabhupada would say, to keep body and soul together. And then, of course, depending ultimately on the outcome for Krishna. Another quote that I like, I don't know where this one came from. It's probably Christian. It says, faith can move mountains, but don't be surprised if God hands you a shovel. So we have to work a little bit. Bhakti is an active process. It's not a passive process of do nothing. Bhakti means devotion. Devotion means service. Service sometimes means work. We use our body, we use our mind, we use our words, all in the service of Krishna. And that is our surrender, that we try to use everything that we have to serve the Lord. And in that way, again, our faith and surrender increases. So as we develop this mood of surrender, we realize that Krishna is our only shelter. And if our faith is strong enough, we could walk right into Agasura, laughing and smiling, knowing that Krishna would save us. And we understand that Krishna will always be there for us, will always be working in our best interest, even if we do not see it at the moment. Of course, the cowherd boys had Krishna right there beside them. It's a little more difficult for us. We don't always see or feel or sense the presence of Krishna at every moment. We should, ideally, but in our neophyte stage, we don't always experience the presence of Krishna. But that faith means that we know that Krishna is there. Even if I don't always perceive it, even if I don't always see what is happening around me, I may not always know the lesson that Krishna is dealing me, but yet I know there is a lesson. I know that Krishna has a purpose and Krishna is there working at every moment. And that's his kindness. Krishna helps us to advance in Krishna consciousness. So that means helping us to surrender, and sometimes he has to make arrangements to help us surrender. And then we protest. Why do I have to surrender? It's like we chant Hare Krishna, 1728 mantras, 24,000 names of God, whatever it is, isn't it? Almost 25,000 names of God a day. And what are we saying? We're saying, oh Radha, oh Krishna, please engage me in your service. Let me surrender to you. And then Krishna arranges for us to surrender and say, I didn't really mean that, Unfortunately, that's our condition, But Krishna's smarter than we are. He says that. He says, I'm not so unintelligent. He said that I'm going to let the living entity continue wallowing in this material world and material desires. No, I'll make those arrangements to help them to get out of this material world, to help them surrender and increase their faith in me. Right. So Krishna is always reciprocating. Sometimes we are reciprocating, sometimes we are resisting that reciprocation. But having faith means I accept it. I accept this loving relationship with Krishna and everything that goes with it, the good and the bad. Good and bad materially. Spiritually, it's all good. Spiritually, everything Krishna does is beneficial towards us. We may view it from material consciousness as good or bad. And even when we're doing that, another part of us has to recognize, okay, I may be experiencing it this way, but my spiritual understanding, my intelligence, helps me to understand that, yes, this is going to be ultimately good for my Krishna consciousness, and it's an opportunity for me to surrender to Krishna. And as we surrender, sometimes amazing things happen. And we begin to see how Krishna is working with us and how Krishna is helping us. And how Krishna is helping us mostly by helping us to spiritually advance. And from that experience, our faith grows and develops and becomes stronger. Which means that our attachment and our attraction to Krishna becomes more and more strong. So eventually we'll be able to go to Vrindavan like the cowherd boys and walk into the mouth of Agasura laughing, smiling with full confidence that Krishna is there to save us. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So I went a little bit long here. Are there a couple of quick questions? Dharmaraj Prabhu?
On many occasions, Srila Prabhupada instructed that having faith in Krishna doesn't mean that you don't use your intelligence, that you go and, for example, stand in the middle of the road when the truck is coming. But we see that these boys, they did completely the opposite. You know, so how can you explain that?
That's the superior nature of the topmost surrender and love and spiritual advancement of the residents of Vrindavan. They actually have no consideration for themselves. Everything is based upon their relationship with Krishna. You know. For me?
I just wondered if you could comment. My experience is that if you don't have sufficient knowledge of Krishna, it's difficult to surrender correctly because your motivations are not very strong.
Yeah, it's described that that knowledge and renunciation are important in the beginning. In other words, we accumulate knowledge to the point that we understand who Krishna is, what is the process of devotional service, etc. But then there's a point, once one understands that and begins the process of bhakti in earnest, that those things become less important. And in fact, if anything, it is devotional service which is generating knowledge. In other words, knowledge and renunciation are concomitant byproducts of bhakti. But in the beginning, it's described, yes, it is important. And that's why we want people, why we preach to people, why we ask people to read these books, so that there is an accumulation of knowledge to help them understand why they should surrender to Krishna, who Krishna is. Yeah. Absolutely. It's needed. Madam Mahaprabhu.
When you were mentioning how a lot of times bhakti and shraddha were used interchangeably, so it was... Also, there's another one that was used there along with those two. Is the third one is because the goal was actually always prema.
Mm-hmm.
So prema is not different from bhakti because that's the whole nature of it. And shraddha in the beginning, it's the different stages of prema that are developing, just like those nine stages that you were mentioning in Dosha. They're each different stages of the development of prema from seeing it from another angle.
I can't recall where it is, but somewhere one of our acharyas has written that, how the different stages of the prema can be considered to be different degrees of faith or different degrees of the advancement of faith, which leads to prema. And so the prema really means total faith. Yeah. Or total faith leads to prema, one could say.
I wasn't sure. When you were discussing the first part, an old Bible verse popped into my mind. He says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. And then I think it said, the rod and the staff, they comfort me.
That's a very nice verse. That shows a high level of advancement.
It almost sounds like it was just paraphrased right from this pastime.
Kind of sounds like bhakti, doesn't it?
The waters and green pastures, you know, the rod and the staff, they're all plain.
Well, we see elements of bhakti in many scriptures. In fact, that's one of the unifying principles of many scriptures of the world and religious traditions, is that there's in most religions there is some degree of bhakti. It may not be fully developed, it may not be fully explained, but it's the essence. If you speak to the average Christian, you say our religion is about developing our love of God. They don't disagree with that too much, do they? I mean, you know, that's a common understanding, and the verse you quoted, I think, is a very eloquent description of that sort of full faith or full surrender that one would have in relationship to God. It's nice. Anything else? Last questions, Anne Lisa? Yes.
And many of the people, you know, they said, I don't want anything to do with you guys, you know, because I tried to pass some books out. And first we were just passing out some invitation cards. And then later on I started passing out some pamphlets.
Mm-hmm.
So when they see us coming, they'll turn their heads, many of them, you know.
Yeah.
They said, some kind of, you know, funny thing. We don't want anything to do with
it. Right. Don't make eye contact. Maybe.
Yeah. So Anyhow, over the gradual period of time, there are many stories I can tell, but there was one police officer, and every time he'll see me, I'll say, you know, good morning, how are you, and try to give him something, and he said, oh, no, 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 we can't take anything. We can't take anything, you know, this is our rule. So I said, okay. So I don't know, maybe it was 2 or 3 weeks down that road. We were going, I was passing. I always was behind because I was doing the books. And he was telling his friend, oh, those people are special. And I thought, well, I didn't hear properly. So, you know, I didn't say anything. I walked by. The next day he said, I went up to him because I heard that. And I said, would you like one of our literature? He said, yeah, you only offer me the first day. And I thought, oh, really? Huh? So then I said, okay. I said, I give him one. And his friend said, what was me? And I thought, wow, I remember you said you couldn't take anything because I didn't say that. Anyhow, yeah. So then we'll pass out the Maha sweets. So I think it must have been 2 or 3 days later, passing out the sweets. He said, hey, what about me? Are you going to give me a sweet in front of all of his friends? So I said, oh, yeah, sure. So I gave his friend. So I said, can you share this? He said, oh, no, this is for me. You give all of them if you want. I thought, ooh. So the next day, anyhow, I was going down, and I was really in a good mood, and I was dancing and passing out the book. He came, and he held my hand, and he was dancing.
The policeman.
A policeman. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, you know. So anyhow, before we were leaving, he said, you know, you guys will come here every day. And I said, oh, we're leaving tomorrow. I was, you know, some people left early. I was there. And he said, you mean I have to wait a whole year to see you again? And I said, no, 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 you don't have to do it. So you can see Krishna. And I was telling him about the books and stuff in the restaurant. And he said, you know what? This is the best thing that has ever happened to me in all my years. So it takes time, yeah. You know. Sometimes I was thinking that wasn't his faith, though. That was my faith. I know these people will be affected because they were saying, oh, we don't want anything. Obviously, they didn't have any faith. You know, they didn't know what we were doing. But somehow I had faith that these people will be changed. So I'm not sure how that worked on their side, but somehow or other, I got the security. Something, you know.
It's a very, 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 very wonderful story. Appreciate that. Actually, there's so many lessons there. I can think of three right off the top of my head. One is the power of devotional service as we're talking about this gradual accumulation of yagata sakriti. And, you know, as one becomes purified through more and more contacts with devotional service, how one is able to take more devotional service. Second thing is just to realize that there are devotees everywhere. There are people out there, even people we wouldn't suspect or think, that are just ready for Krishna consciousness. You know, and I think the third point is we also see the power of the sincerity of the devotees, such as Mother Guru Prasad, who are out there, and just their presence and their essence and their qualities attract people. And I'm sure that it was your being friendly and being there and just continuing, you know, your determination was seen, and that was very influential. So I thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.